changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. Could have come this far. Mm-hmm. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I'll take you just the way you are. Don't change the color of your hair. Mm-hmm. You always have my unspoken passion. Want someone that I can talk to. I want you just the way you are. Need to know that you will always be the same old someone. We'll be right back.
times or whatever we are calling ourselves these days. My current location I cannot disclose. Geographically, it's nowhere that I've been before, but emotionally we're on the same. At me. If you have the chance to hold, it's a duty. Don't sleep, don't even think about it. No need, maybe a little bit. Still dream about waking up free as we can be.
Forget whatever doesn't fit.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good.
Good? That's good. I need to get a drink. I'll be right back.
As your so-called companion, the worst jokes and the greatest times, got me high and the stars got me home. Faith in me was
okay. I'm back. How you doing?
Good. What are you up to?
Me? The usual. Let's see here. Got a big, probably be interrupted during the show for alerts on the State of the Union address.
It's going to be 2 hours.
Is it really? 2 hours of ranting? You know, he's changing the name of San Andreas Fault.
Okay.
Did you know, to Biden's Fault.
grade C.
Oh, silly you are. All right, here we go. Let me just check everything here, here, here. This is up. Dip. Okay, here we go.
Hello, and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, wrapping up February already. It was pretty quick. It is the 24th of 2026 of February.
Yeah, exciting stuff, exciting stuff. The State of the Union address is going on right about now, so I am certain we're going to see some interesting moves with regard to the potential for markets to move, and we'll see all sorts of things. There are some hints that he's going to be discussing another tax relief package.
Yeah, I heard that.
That's pretty unbelievable if you think about it.
Okay.
Well, didn't we just have a huge one that was taking our tax down to the lowest level of whatever, but yet we have a major deficit and we have still a lot of debt? How do you do all that? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you just hope for the best.
Oh, I'm not getting anywhere with you. Anyway, look, we got a new close to the pin we announced last week on Caterpillar. That's going running right now. You got another, what is the exact time? Let's see. 3 days, 2 hours, 57 minutes, and 7 seconds. To put your guess in for that particular close to the pin over on dhunplugged.com. We're going to be talking about DOD, which is dead on delivery, dead on doornail. DOD, Department of Defense, which is now Department. No, Disruptor Disruptors. Disrupt. Have you heard this yet?
No.
You can't because I just made it up. Disruptors Disruptors. China markets reopening after the Lunar New Year, little things happening there, and actually a little bit of a relief because we did see over the weekend.
Did you get your moon cake?
I did not. Should I have?
Well, you're supposed to.
Did you get?
Nah.
Did you get those little packets, those little envelopes, the little red envelopes with stuff in it? That's very good luck. The red envelopes.
I got red envelope with some stuff in it for the No Agenda show, but it was show donation in one of those envelopes.
Yeah, well, that's the good luck.
Envelopes. Some of them are pretty elaborate.
Really? And they're not too big, but they're very nice. That was a very... By the way, I listened to the entire... I was on my way over to St. Pete last weekend, and you told me that I should listen to No Agenda, which I do. But this time, sometimes, you know, I skip around a little bit here and there. I listened to it from start to finish. I did not hear one spot dedicated to promoting DH Unplugged.
That must have been the show before.
Oh, very good. See, this is how it goes. Oh, I'll listen to that one too.
Two shows a week.
Maybe it's the one which that's on Thursdays and Sundays, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
Yeah, some good stuff, though. There was some really good commentary on the last show. My wife and I were giggling on a few of them on the way over. Mexico cartel wars going on.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Well, that affected me.
Well, were you going to go to Cancun?
No, I was going to go, actually.
Vallarta?
No, even worse. I was going to Jalisco in Guadalajara.
Oh, not good.
I was supposed to be there March 9th. I was invited over by... This is an interesting story. I was invited over... Did I tell you this? By the Patron, the tequila company?
Oh, right, the tequila people.
Yeah, I was invited over to Hacienda Patron for 3 days on them.
Yeah, that'd been great.
Great, they're flying me over. They're putting me up. They're having meals made for me by private chefs. They have agave farm tours, and it goes on and on and on. And then this happens. So I'm not going, at least right now.
I wouldn't think so, yeah.
I was in the middle of it all. Markets, mortgage rates looking good. We're seeing a multi-year low on mortgage rates, which is awesome. Tariffs found illegal. That was another thing that happened last Friday. What, Thursday? Friday? Thursday, Friday? Not stopping anything, because right after that, President Trump said that it's okay because actually we're going to collect more money now.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, it's funny.
And he went to immediately a 10% increase in the tariffs on a broad-based basis across for everybody. So it's kind of, in a way, blew out a lot of his pressure points, because he used them as a tactic specific to get his way by putting on 20, 40, 50, whatever it was, and then coming back and saying, okay, we'll drop the tariffs. And now it's just blanket across, pissed off. India basically said, thank you, now we're not negotiating anymore. You don't have the pull anymore. And also in Europe, the EU said, you know what, a deal's a deal. We're not giving you another cent. Whatever we did is what we're doing. After 10%, a day passed, and then he increased it to 15%. And we're not quite sure how this is going to work. This is I've got the section, 252 or something tariff. It's good for 150 days that doesn't require congressional approval until the 150th day, and then probably it's going to come off if Congress doesn't.
Yeah, then he can put it in at 15.1%.
I don't think so. I think this...
No, you can, as long as it's different.
So you could be switching it every day and just extending it forever?
Well, switching it every 150 days forever, yeah. He's not going to do that.
On Monday, we came back, and markets weren't totally happy about that and a few things. AI taking a bite out of stock prices. And there's a lot going on. Fascinating. IBM, what happened there. See, do we have something on IBM here? Because if not, yeah, here, let's talk about that right now. This is pretty fascinating. This is the disruption of the disruptors. Disrupting the disruptors. AI. Almost every day there's a new announcement that AI can do this or do that. We saw that with the lawyers, right, where a lot of the LegalZoom and all that got smushed. There was Charles Schwab and Morgan Stanley and a few of these guys got hurt because it was a new tool that could do some financial work for you. And we're seeing item after item, like the real estate companies and the software companies like Workday or Salesforce or whatever. Well, it was... Now it turned to another, again, this is happening rapid fire. All of a sudden, the realization or the tool that can help, as AI is putting out, particularly Anthropic, Claude, put out a code release because there was a security code tool by Anthropic, which scans code databases, code bases for vulnerabilities. So what it does is, where we do, you would put a company like CloudStrike, or name your company out there, put it on, and this company would protect you because it was looking for vulnerabilities. It would put another protection layer, and it would do scanning and all this. Well, Anthropic, and part of Claude, the code security, it can scan the database and the code base for vulnerabilities and suggest software patches for human review, fueling this narrative that the AI platforms may be moving more quickly into parts of the security workflow than investors had previously expected. CrowdStrike and others dropping, but that was down like 9%. Now, for cybersecurity, what this did was it raised this concern about the potential for, well, who the hell is going to need these companies anymore if we have a constant AI surveillance team that maybe you have to pay for or as a kimono, or right now not, that you could identify all this cloud security and workflows and security operations and the automation where the AI, these native AI tools could start to narrow the perceived differentiation of all the different ones and why we didn't need this. Do you follow what I'm saying? This is a big, big deal. Don't you think that AI is starting to creep into real life now, into hurting some of these companies?
Well, I think it's definitely hurting some of these companies, but whether it's actually useful in security is, I don't personally see it.
Well, if it's going to be continually learning and adjusting and adapting and scanning your database and your code for vulnerabilities and then suggesting patchwork to immediately fix it, how is that not beneficial?
Well, one, I don't think it can do that because it's not a learning. The AI doesn't learn. We know that. You can't really. It's based on what it already knows. It doesn't learn anything new, generally speaking. When you interact with it, it'll take your advice and compare it to the large language model, and then if it's not in there, it just ignores you half the time, or if not all the time. A, and B, some of these vulnerabilities have never been fully understood, and I don't see how AI is going to be any better than a human in that regard. And I just don't see how it's going to ruin what you're saying is it's going to ruin the future of Cloudflare.
Yep.
Is basically the company we're talking about. I'd have to see it to believe it. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, let me tell you what else happened. So then on the heels of that, another software issue happened where we saw that Claude can automate COBOL modernization. Now, COBOL, which I think it's been around since, what, 1959 or something like that?
It's old.
Which is stands for Common Business Oriented Language. It's a high-level English-like programming tool. Yeah, 59. It's created in 59 for business, finance, administrative data processing. So it's renowned for, definition.
It's the first major language after Fortran.
Right. I learned this in high school. We had to learn COBOL for basic stuff. You know, it was testing on this stuff and all that. What's interesting about this is, about COBOL, I don't know if you know this, it's estimated that still, after all this time, 70 to 80% of the world's business transactions are processed by COBOL. Did you know that?
It doesn't surprise me.
Think about that. It's a language from 1959. It's been adjusted and modernized and all that over time. But wow. Now, with the automation and the ability for Claude to modernize COBOL, the main benefactor of COBOL usage is what company? IBM. IBM, I guess, owns it or something, right? Does IBM own COBOL?
No.
Well, why did it drop so much, though? I think they're... IBM and COBOL. Let's see what this says. Heavily invested in COBOL, its mainframe business relies on this language for its core banking, insurance, and government applications. It provides modern development environments and compilers and debuggers for COBOL. While IBM is modernizing legacy code with AI, recent advancements from competitors can translate increased pressure. So they come out with this tool. IBM is down. The most it's been down in 20 years.
Why wouldn't it go up?
Because Claude did it for free. You don't need IBM now.
Oh, you don't need the consulting service.
Correct. So now IBM is down, I think, 13%, the worst since like 2008 or something. In one day. Wiped out a ridiculous amount of profit from the company.
Well, what happens when Claude decides to start modernizing or doing a vibe coding or whatever you want to call it with when it comes to Red Hat? That's going to be even worse on IBM.
Could be. That was a big part of
IBM may be ruined by this all this
could
stuff.
Be.
Now, this I can agree with.
Well, the problem is that this is slowly but surely chipping away at its own not competitors, but the people that are building this stuff. It's starting to kill the parents. The children are killing the parents.
Technology's always worked.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the mini computer ending up getting eaten up by the microcomputer. Mainframes, yeah, they're useful for certain things you can't really do with small desktop stuff. But it's bound to happen. I mean, if IBM was insightful, they would have bought out one of the AI companies before any of this happened. Got in early, been a partner, done something like Elon did, and then not have to worry about it and just let it, you know, do it internally.
But they're not.
No, well, they missed the boat.
They missed the boat on a lot of things, IBM, over the years, and that's why they had to go out and buy Red Hat, that basically was the savior of the company, right?
It's what it looks like.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. I asked, as I was thinking through this, I was like, okay, so what's going to happen to all these companies? What's going to be the end result? And I started thinking back to the same discussion I've been having about OpenAI being the first, being the first in on this chatbot and public usage AI the way we know it now, right? And how OpenAI has been basically funding, right? It's been funding the future with an unknown bankroll. We talked about this.
The unknown bankroll, yes. Right.
So,
circular investing.
Yeah, and it's getting worse. Today there's another one out there, which we'll talk about. Grok, I load up Grok, and I'm like, hey, give me a prediction about the future of OpenAI ChatGPT. Like, where is this going? So it made a really nice table for me, by the way. It said that the scenario is a thriving leader. The likelihood, it said my estimate. The likelihood, my estimate. That's what this came back as it was calculates about 40% probability of that. Sustain the breakthroughs they'll have to do, partnership with like Microsoft, regulatory wins, and OpenAI will end up as a AI giant, ChatGPT as an ecosystem hub for agents and robots. What's the more probable? An evolved survivor. High probability, 50%. The key factors will be adaption to agents and hardware mergers. Outcome forum exists, but rebranded ChatGPT integrates into a daily life tool. That's the highest probability. They're not going to be the one. They'll probably be absorbed, merged, or rebranded somehow. And a decline in an absolute acquisition that just because they don't do well, they just have to get out, is the lowest probability, about 10%. Key factors, overcompetition, funding collapse, which I don't know. I'm in this camp here. Outcome forum, absorbed or legacy ChatGPT commoditized or becomes obsolete. This is obsolete. This is the disruptor disruption. Disrupting the disruptors. This is on episode number 792 of DH Unplugged over on dhunplugged.com. By the way, that table is available. I thought that was a pretty interesting insight. And I loved how it said my estimate. Like it was really thinking through this.
Yeah. Yeah. This is taking a look at whatever other people thought, maybe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. There's no good. It does not reasoned.
So the tariffs, I'd like to say that who knows what's actually going on here? We have 100% chaos. There's no, now it's really hard to follow. Maybe that's intentional. I don't know. Supreme Court ruled 63 that it was illegal. Illegal. Now we have again 10% flat, then a, wait, hold on a second, 15%. FedEx is seeking for illegal IEEPA tariff imposed by Trump refunds after the Supreme Court ruled they were exceeding his authority. Now there's also, besides them, there's numerous lawsuits expected. Let me tell you something. You want to know who the winner in the Trump administration is? It's the lawyers.
The lawyers. Well, they're going to keep busy.
They're keeping busy charging all sorts of money.
If anybody thinks they're getting their money back, they got another thing coming.
You don't think that?
That's the case because they pass it along to the consumer. Is the consumer not going to get to sue Federal Express for overcharging?
I want my money.
Let's go that
way. I want my money.
If they're going to get their money back, they can, which they pass along, something like 80% gets passed on to the customer. Should the customer now sue them?
I think you should be the party that does a class action. You're the person that starts a class action for the average Joe out there to get their refund back. Find an attorney to do it, and you'll be the guy.
Yeah, well, I need to find the attorney.
Yeah. So Apple has now also spent more than $3 billion on tariffs since these trade policies were enacted. What about those? Again, you bought an iPhone, and the companies weren't absorbing all the tariffs, maybe some of them, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, another lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yep. So estimated that
nobody's getting their money.
$175 billion in tariffs have been collected already.
Yeah.
I think the changeover is starting tomorrow, where the tariffs change again. A group of 22 U.S. Senate Democrats on Monday have already introduced legislation that would require President Trump's administration to fully refund with 180 days of the revenue, all the revenue, with interest, by the way, with interest. Oh, so kind of interesting, I thought. Again, I think it's very confusing. It throws our certainty, and that's why the dollar continues to go down, by the way, why gold and silver again popped. Stocks moved down, moved up. They don't exactly know what to do with all this. Bonds, we had about 4% on the 10-year, which is a multi-month low. Mortgage rates clipped 6%, under 6% for the 30-year mortgage. Pretty good. That's going to help spur some housing for the wrong reasons. For the wrong reasons. I'd like to take a moment, John, and say, stop the presses. After years of John C. Dvorak's rants on a subject, he's finally getting his way. Finally, a question that remained unanswered and disturbing, probably one of the most difficult quandaries to explain in decades, has finally been resolved. Do you want to know what that is?
I know what it is.
What is it?
It's a touchscreen on a MacBook.
A touchscreen on a MacBook, which, since I've known you, you've said, what the hell?
Yeah, well, it's because they were so far behind. This is was it over a decade? Everyone's been putting touch screens on these machines, portable machines, and regular screens too sometimes, but that's rare. But yeah, all these little laptops have had touch screens forever, and the Apple people did, you know, it's not as though it's a technology that was, you know, on the cutting edge of anything. They just kept putting it off and putting it off, figuring, why should we do it? Because our customers are going to just buy our product no matter what. And so we'll just go along with, you know, just selling in the same old, and with not that much in the way of modifications. And heck with the touch screen, why should we put the extra effort in? And they finally caved.
I think that you were always of the opinion that it was a marketing deal to have people buy not only the computer, but they want a touchscreen, they're going to have to get the iPad. That, I think that was your basis, wasn't it?
I don't remember. This is over 10 years ago that I started this complaining.
Well, let's just talk about that. Apple now is going to be introducing touchscreens on the Mac. They're going to also have the new dynamic island at the center type of the display. They're going to have OLED screen technology. It's going to have a refreshed dynamic user interface, and it can shift between being optimized for touch or point and click input. What the hell is point and click, by the way? Is that mouse or touchpad?
Yeah, point and click, mouse or pad. Yeah. Pad, probably.
So it's optimized. Pad. It's optimized for that, by the way.
What does that even
mean? It's optimized. They're optimizing it.
Doesn't mean anything.
Well, if it's going to be optimized, I may buy one.
It's going to be optimized. I want optimized.
Whatever. I don't want it suboptimized. I want it optimized. I'm going to buy that.
What a crock.
Europe, back to tariffs. We're just going to skip that. They said a deal's a deal and all active discussions are halted. But, oh, by the way, the potential winners. Who are the potential, what countries, where in the world are the potential winners from this tariff illegality, which doesn't matter because they're still going to be
Did these deals. The countries that did the deals first are the winners, aren't they?
I think
they got in, they did their deal, they signed on the dotted line, and now we're out of here. You can do whatever you want after this, but we did a deal. We're going to do this.
It could be if the tariffs on those are no longer any higher because we have these blankets out there at 15% now plus some other deal. But it looks like from all the research I've seen is Brazil and China. Because from what I've read and what I've seen, President Xi Jinping of China has now more bargaining power. Because he's going to be like, you know, all right, what do you want? Well, you can't like hit us any. You can't hit us with a 50% anymore. Remember how we went through that whole thing? Oh, you're not doing what I want here. Is, you know, we're going to charge 50%, 60%, 100%, 140%. Remember that whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
So the removal of these tariff threats will make it harder for the president to press China and Xi Jinping for larger purposes of, you know what? You know what? We somehow want them to buy, right? It's like it seems like the most important
soybeans.
Yes, the most important vegetable in the world, it seems. Soybeans.
Soybeans.
What about the poor potatoes in Idaho?
They don't eat potatoes in China.
They do not. Nor do they really have a lot of milk in their dairy.
Most of the Chinese, in fact, most of the world, except for the Western countries, have lactose intolerance.
I am part Chinese, possibly.
Most, I think, it's like 80% of Chinese have lactose intolerance.
Yeah, you never hear like a mugu gai pan with a melted Swiss cheese.
No, because they got lactose intolerance. It's just a problem. It's only Western Europe. It's in the French and the Spanish. Right. Where they make all those cheeses. They don't make cheese in China.
Right.
They would. I mean, if they could eat cheese, they would. They just don't. It's not done.
Right. I'm going to have an egg roll. Would you like?
You can't digest it.
Would you like the egg roll with or without cheese, sir? No.
There was a guy at the University of California at Berkeley back in the day, 60s and 70s, that had before food trucks, there were these other kind of like, it was like a trailer that they was left on campus. And this is one kid that was a Chinese kid selling egg rolls on the University of California campus right in front of the ASUC store. And he developed an egg roll with a nice, delicious product. And he stab a knife into it, slice it across, and stuff a big piece of cheddar cheese in it.
Yeah.
And it, which was absolutely delicious. Egg roll with cheddar cheese is astonishingly nice. And I guess he could eat it. And there's also a guy, there's a cheese shop in Berkeley that's over by Monterey Foods that is run by a Chinese guy who is a cheese expert. Hmm. And he's the cheese guy. I mean, there are Chinese that can tolerate lactose, and it's not like a problem for them, and they appreciate it. So it's not a known, but it's just not common.
Yeah. But soybeans will be being purchased, maybe, possibly. We're going to see, this whole crazy demands, which would not be, there's going to be very little teeth in it because of this, right? Now we're going to see probably the team push harder for access to advanced semiconductors because of the removal of these trade restrictions on Chinese companies they want. U.S. They're going to probably say they want reduced U.S. support for Taiwan. So this is according to Wu Xinbo, director of Fudan University's Center for American Studies. I don't know why it's not the Center for Chinese Studies, but so he's got a
Center for American Studies in China.
It seems. Where is this?
That's what you do. You study us.
Yeah, like aliens picking us up and dissecting us, kind of studying.
It's like Chinese studies at the University of California or Stanford.
This is in
same thing.
Shanghai.
Doing it going the other way. Shanghai.
This is Shanghai, Fudan University. Fudan. NVIDIA. NVIDIA is going to drop its fiscal Q4 2026, ending January 2025 results tomorrow after making after a make or break moment for the AI trade. So this is going to be pretty big. The bar is pretty high after years, and I say years, of blowout results. Whispers of peak AI are slowing.
Peak AI.
That's the new whisper.
Yeah, I'm all in with this.
They're keeping investors on edge. Consensus expectations looking for revenue.
It'll be super high, but it may be the end of it.
Yep. Jensen Huang is a master at what would we call it? Hawking, Barnum and Bailey, P.T. Barnumism. He's a master at getting people to buy into whatever it is, whether it's believable or not. Most of the stuff he said, give him credit, come true, so we got to believe him. But the estimates for analysts are about $65 to $66 billion. They guided about $65 billion in the prior report, which is about up 2%. EPS, about $1.50 to $1.53, up 72% from a year ago. They're targeting, listen to this number. This is pretty unbelievable. Targeting gross margin. Now, what is a good gross margin? A good gross margin is, I don't know, 50%?
40% is a good gross margin.
75% on a non-GAAP basis.
That's a good gross margin.
Good gross margin, which says to me one thing. Price is too high for the object you're selling.
Yeah, it's overpriced. That's exactly right. By two.
Key driver.
As expensive as it should be.
Yeah, exactly. But if you can get the price, if you were in business and you can get twice what it should be, would you get it?
Absolutely.
No question.
But I'd also get a new leather jacket.
Of course you would. Who else is doing? I saw Nissan Taleb. You know who that is? The guy that wrote the book Black Swan.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
He wears like a double-breasted black blazer with a black mock turtle. Or a rounded collar, whatever you want to call it. Not mocked over, rounded collar. That's his garb at all times. He's like that guy.
I always wonder why these characters have to feel that they have to wear what amounts to a uniform.
Not only uniform, like it's more than a uniform because, I mean, some uniforms, like a football uniform, if you're home or away, it changes. Navy uniforms, depending if it's formal, there's different things you could wear, right? These guys wear the same thing like they have. It'd be scary to go in their
Steve
house.
Steve Jobs' fault.
It could be. And what was her name?
I think so.
Yeah, Steve Jobs and the woman that was incarcerated because of her lies about her blood testing.
Oh, right. That gal.
What was her name?
The Theranos lady.
Yeah, Theranos, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. I can think of it in a second.
Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah, that's right.
Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah, she wore she always talked like this.
Yes.
She had an outfit that she just wore out.
But it's the same thing that you wonder if you go in this person's house, you know they don't just have one. This is a billionaire. He's got to have literally a closet full of the same outfits.
Yes, exactly. You know, this goes back, I don't want to, this is calling in something from the distant past. But I remember Faith Popcorn used to be a very famous female influencer before social networks, and her name was Faith Popcorn.
I remember the name. I don't remember what this was.
Yeah, she had all these recommendations that dressed for success. She was a dress for success woman. And she says, if you find something like a dress or a top that you like, buy a dozen of them and just wear them all the time. It makes you look like you never have a change of clothes. What do you, it just, to me, I always thought that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So in other words, you're so limited in your perspective about what you can wear that you just buy one outfit and wear, that's all you wear. And I think that's where this kind of filter down into Steve Jobs and Elizabeth Holmes and others, especially in Silicon Valley, where they have no taste. IBM used to have a dress code. And I remember when IBM dropped their dress code, and these poor bastards, the IBM dress code was a certain dress code. You'd always see it back in the 80s, and they dropped it somewhere along the line. And the first thing you started to notice is these guys didn't know how to dress themselves.
But
I don't know where that rant was going or where it's headed, but it's an observation.
The point is that NVIDIA is putting out the earnings tomorrow.
Yes, and it's going to be good. This is going to be money.
Yep. So the key driver in the earnings is probably going to be circled around data centers. The segment there, they're expected to crush numbers pretty well, and hopefully see a major ramp up by the Blackwell chip. And then after Blackwell, they have the Vera Rubin. That's the next thing. And then they're going to start talking about, because China's not taken any delivery yet on the high-end chips that were supposedly now allowed. The H200s.
Yeah.
But they right now, I think I saw a report today that literally zero have been sold into China. That doesn't mean they have been sold into China through other outlets and workarounds, but direct sales from NVIDIA have not happened. Then we got Home Depot earnings. The home improvement retailer, the giant, gained about 2.5% today after posting fourth quarter adjusted earnings of about $2.72 per share on revenue about $38.5 billion. That exceeded the per share earnings by about just short of 20 cents. And revenues were a little bit higher by just ever so slightly much. That was good enough to get things going there. AMD, that's the news today. That was the wacky, wacky world of circular financing and vendor financing. Now, listen to this. Semiconductor company of AMD was up a lot earlier on this morning on this news. Came down a little bit, but it's still up about, 10%. After it inked a multi-year deal with Meta to lend, that's the word they use, to lend up to 6 gigawatts of its graphics processing units to artificial intelligence data centers. Now, the cost of the deal is unclear, but the companies agreed to include a performance-based warrant that could amount up to 160 million shares of AMD, by the way, that will be given or granted to Meta if they take it at 1 cent each. We call that free in some circles, by the way.
Yeah, it's free. Yeah.
Now, Meta has committed to deploying up to 6 gigawatts of AMD's Instinct GPUs, these high-end GPUs, optimized for AI workflows to power its massive AI data centers. The analysts estimate the GPU portion alone could be worth anywhere from $60 to $100 billion over 5 years. So just to get back to this for a second, Meta says we will buy all of these, we'll get these and all of that, and pay you for it, but in exchange, you're going to give us shares at 1 cent. You see how that works? Up to 10% of the company. So why is this going on?
Well, you tell me. You're
why is it
at this than I am when it comes to why this is going on?
Well, because it's shenanigans is what it is.
It's shenanigans. Okay.
That's what it is.
Let me write that one down.
it's corporate shenanigans. It's financing. It's
shenanigans.
It's creative math. And once again, you get the opportunity to get something, but for less value. It's because they're going to get money back. It's to get a piece of the company. So basically, they're saying you want to buy the company, fine. we'll sell it, but we're going to do it in the form of getting revenue from it. The whole thing's weird.
It's a way of buying stock that is convoluted.
The whole thing is very weird. And why isn't it just straight outright, you know, hey, it's like me buying something, I'll give you a piece of my house for that. But you're going to pay me in the meantime, and then maybe I'll give you the back end of this, kind of to pay you back. The whole thing is very odd. And they give it to him basically for free on top of it all. They give him warrants to buy it at 0.01. Now, they're performance-based. There's something baked into the agreement that would require, of course, for some kind of level of financial, high watermarks, something in the deal, whether it's production-based or whether it's getting enough power, or whether it's enough, you know, the juice of the AI is doing what it's supposed to do, whatever exactly the requirement and the benchmark is to get this deal done, to give them that. I mean, it would seem that the performance base would want to happen. So it's an enticement is what it is for Meta to buy these quickly, to utilize them, et cetera. And then say, you know, we do all this, we'll give you a piece of the company. It's almost like frequent flyer miles for buying AMD chips. It'll give you a couple of shares.
Yeah.
Crazy. Mortgage rates. The average mortgage rate on the 30-year mortgage fell to 5.99% on Monday. And crazy stuff. There's crazy stuff going on. Because this is the lowest level from 2022. Basically, what's happening is here, yes, some of it is being forced by the Fed or the idea that the Fed's lowering rates, but that usually happens on the short end of the curve. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have a discussion with this week on the Disciplined Investor podcast with Danielle DiMartino Booth, who is a Fed insider. She worked at the Fed for many years, wrote a book called Fed Up, and kind of exposed a lot of stuff that happened at the Fed. So she'll be my guest coming up this week.
I like the title.
Yeah, Fed Up. Yeah. She's awesome.
Very funny.
She's awesome. Last year at this time, this is what's really interesting. Last year, mortgage rates were 6.89%. So here's the math. If you're buying a house and you put down 20% on a house, about $400,000 house, your monthly payment would have been a year ago $1,916 for both the principal and interest. Today. A year ago, it would have been about $2,100. So you're saving about $189 per month, which is a substantial savings when you multiply that out.
Yeah.
So mortgages are down. The problem is we have a lot of stubborn homeowners that are sellers that don't want to come down to the price. And more so, we have a bunch of boneheaded real estate agents that don't want to drop the price because maybe their commission will be cut a little bit, not realizing if they drop the price, they'll sell it and they can move on to the next house to sell and make even more. But we're seeing that there are survey after survey that
nobody wants to drop the price.
Nobody wants to drop the price, the real estate agent or the homeowners.
No.
They think the house is worth more. Next door is worth less, but their house is worth more. You know how that goes. There's a lot of, have you seen some of the tactics that are going on? It used to be you put your house up for sale, someone to come in and say, I like this, come in and redo it. Today, there's all the staging that's being done at homes. Have you seen all this?
Well, staging has been going on for a decade.
You get like a Sotheby's that will come in and actually redecorate your house, put furniture in, and will give you a commission if they sell the furniture with your house.
Well, I didn't know about that part.
Yep. This is hardcore staging.
That is hardcore staging.
We're not talking about just putting up like pretty pictures of someone else's family in your house. We're talking about, you know, saying, hey, let's put in furniture that really is more current.
Yeah, they redecorate.
Yeah. Yep. We have a record to announce on life insurance. Not every day do I see something like this. As a matter of fact, I never see anything like this. I thought this was pretty fascinating. Manulife Financial sold a $300 million life insurance policy in Singapore, topping, this is kind of something also interesting, I guess it's a record for everything, topping what Guinness World Record certified as the most valuable policy ever issued. Can you believe there's something as a Guinness World Book of Records largest life insurance policy? It's crazy. Well,
makes sense.
Now, the policy surpassed the previous record of $250 million set by HSBC Life in Hong Kong in 2024. Manulife said in a statement Tuesday that the deal reflects the growing demand from ultra-wealthy clients to preserve their assets. In Singapore, over the last 12 months, Manulife
has... Wait a minute. How's that preserving their assets?
You can do a lot of really interesting estate planning with life insurance. For example, you have a $100 million estate. When you die, take out some of that because you get allowable amounts to be passed on. So let's just take out $25 million. Just for lack of a better number. $75 million is now taxable, and you could go up to about 50% in estate tax. So there are some things you could do, but generally speaking, you're going to have an estate tax problem. What you do is you buy maybe a $75 or $100 million life insurance policy, and what happens is that goes to your estate, your heirs, tax-free. And you take some money out that you would have had, lower your estate down so your estate is worth less in the future, less taxes, but yet you increased your estate by buying this life insurance. And you could do that in a couple of different ways. You could do it you'll do it inside of a special trust, and you can give some of that money on an annual basis so you don't eat into your whole unified credit. And then on top of that, what's interesting is you could do it in a second to die life insurance policy where you get preferential rates because you actually are insuring the lives of two people in one contract. And that, my folks, is your estate planning life insurance lesson of the day. Hey, like that
sounds like just a way to cheat the tax man.
Correct.
Well, why don't you just eliminate the death tax?
Well, because they still get their money, the tax man. They'll get their money on the base estate. They'll still get the money, but your family uses dollars that are discounted to buy the life insurance to make the estate whole in the future. It's a very efficient way to do it. For assuming you're healthy and young enough. I mean, even old, even people 50, 60. But you have to be healthy. And you have to be able to grasp the concept. The concept works well, though.
Well, the concept's interesting enough, but what are the premiums on something like that?
Huge, enormous. On a $300 million life insurance policy, it could be, I don't know, $15 million a year? $10 million a year? $5 million? Whatever it is. It's still $5 million for $300 million, right? And the best deal on this is if you drop dead day after you take out the policy.
Yeah, the next day, yeah, that would be the best deal.
That's the best deal.
Not for you.
Yeah. No, not really for you. But for your estate, it's good.
For the estate, for sure.
Bitcoin has been in a rout. Gemini said it was axing as much of a quarter of its staff. This is the Winklevise. They're getting rid of about 25% of their staff and exiting the UK, European Union, and Australia entirely. What happened? I thought this was, what happened? It's supposed to be the best thing ever. Gemini was supposed to be, well, there's not enough business. They're not making money. Hmm. This week it also parted with its chief operating officer, chief financial officer, and chief legal officer all in a single day. Its stock has fallen more than 80% from a post-listing high last year, collapsing its market value from a peak of about $4 billion to a lowly $700 million. This was one of the first exchanges out there. Obviously, there's a lot more that came into play, and they beat them out. Coinbase being the most well-known. Over to Greenland, U.S. is sending a hospital ship over. Seems that in Denmark's Joint Arctic Command Center said that it was evacuating a crew member who required urgent medical treatment from a U.S. submarine in Greenlandic waters, 7 nautical miles outside of Greenland's capital, Nuuk. Greenland said thanks, but no thanks. I don't exactly know why we had to send a hospital ship, or is that a quote-unquote hospital ship? Is it like a ship that we're calling a hospital ship, but it may be actually a military-based ship that we're trying to show them who's boss. Because I don't know what happened. What happened to the whole Greenland discussion? We were taking it over. We're going back. We're buying it.
Comes and goes. It's a cycle.
U.S. investors are pulling money out of their own stock market in the U.S. at the fastest pace in at least 16 years. 16 years, we haven't seen this kind of withdrawals. As big tech returns fade and better performing overseas markets look more attractive, which is interesting because now it's happening. Don't forget, the chasing returns is a favorite pastime of the average investor. People who go to the church of what's happening now. They're looking at emerging markets and sounds like, hey, let's put our money there. So
the past six, there always looks like opportunity.
It's always
there.
The grass is always greener over the septic tank. You know that, right? In the last 6 months, U.S. domiciled investors pulled more than $75 billion from U.S. equity products, with $52 billion flowing out since the start of 2026 alone. The most in the first 8 weeks of the year since at least 2010. Now, what is that doing to the markets? Absolutely nothing. Everything is fine.
Well, it's putting money on the sidelines, which is going to possibly boost the market more eventually.
Yeah, they're moving into Europe. European companies' earnings growth is also picking up.